Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all this morning. You know, the life of Joseph is it's a life story that we're really quite familiar with. And I know last week was kind of just dive in and hang on, because we covered over 9 chapters to get the backstory, to get the genealogy of Joseph. As we were walking through that, did it really click with us that as we were looking, if you were looking in Joseph's life for any hint that this contributed to his greatness, that this is what would make him the leader that he became, was there any hint that that might be found in the family tree? Not really. Yeah, very difficult family life that he grew up in. A very difficult environment, yet God was always working in this young man's life. God was always shaping the direction, the focus, the purpose, the scope of exactly what he wanted to do through this young man's life. And this morning, we're going to be able to finally move beyond that pace of 9 chapters in 1 week. We actually get to slow down a little, and we're going to look at a chapter at a time. So if you'll go ahead and take your Bible, turn to Genesis 37. We're going to look at chapter 37. Jim, you missed chapter 36. Well, you can read it for yourself. I'll tell you what's in there. It's just a list of Esau's family's descendants. Okay? You can read it for yourself and meditate on it to get all the spiritual blessing you need. But we're going to skip it for the sake of the lessons. Chapter 37, however, we pick back up with something that really matters. So let's look a little bit at chapter 37 as it begins. It kind of opens up at simply enough. Look at the first 2 verses. It simply tells us, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan, and these are the generations of Jacob. But yet in those few words, we realize that what we're being given in this chapter, even as it starts, is we're given a setting, and we're given a time frame. And this is going to be helpful for us. The setting is, we're looking at Jacob still. We're looking at his family, his impact. We know where he is. He's in the land where his fathers sojourned. Isaac, Abraham, that's Mamre, that's Hebron. So they're in this area. But the fact that they said sojourned is important. Because when you go home this afternoon and you really want to read chapter 36, and you read about Esau's prolific lineage, you're going to hear his sons called chiefs, kings, nations. But here, we're still shepherds. So here we have this nomadic family life. We have Jacob. We have his family still in the same area where Isaac and Abraham had lived. And then we're told these are the generations. You have to go all the way back to chapter 2, verse 4 to get that word for the first time. Genesis 2, verse 4 says, these are the generations of creation. Toledot. It's a formulaic Hebrew expression. Toledot is simply this. This is the account of. This is what matters. So what we're about to hear is the account of Jacob, but it shifts immediately to Joseph. Well, that's a little bit of a warning sign or a heads up to us right away. Because it's saying, what's before us is important in the whole history of this nation. The life of Joseph. So let's look at verse 2. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report to them, to their father. What we see right off as we're looking at Joseph's life is his life is at a turning point. He's actually first at a tipping point, though. Coming from Colorado, you know, we got some really, really, really strong Chinook winds. Sometimes you see even footage still of a tractor trailer going down the highway, and suddenly you realize he's not on all wheels. He's starting to tip. He's getting up into the air. And so, or you can maybe visualize it as something we maybe all have done as kids. You know the chair? Miles loved to rock back in the chair. My dad said, don't do that. You're going to break the legs. Well, I never broke any legs, but I almost broke my arm. You know, because you find that tipping point. You're rocking back, and you're just trying to see, how long can I stay here until I'm flat on my back and embarrassed? Well, he's at a tipping point in his life. Joseph brings a bad report. He's out with his half-brothers, the sons of Zilpah and Bilhah. Not just the half-brothers, but the half-brothers are the least revered out of the whole clan. He's out there with Dan, with Naphtali, with Gad, with Asher, and he comes back and he tells Dad something bad is going on. Now, right away, for all of us who like to look at Joseph, we want to make sure that we realize as we're studying Joseph as a type of Christ, that all types of Christ fall short of the antitype, which is Christ himself. That's a given. So we look for ways that we can maybe point to Joseph and say, see, he wasn't perfect. No, he wasn't. He was a sinner who needed to be saved by grace like all of us. And yet, God in his delight and his pleasure presents him to us almost as flawless. But yet here we have a young 17-year-old who comes back. Maybe you had a brother that was this way. Tattletale, Tommy Dale's a tattletale, or whatever. And it's almost as if that image is front and center. It's like he's a tattletale. He comes back and says, hey, Dad, you're not going to believe what the guys are up to this time. But I want to challenge us. Look at verse 14. So he said, Jacob said to Joseph, go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word. See, this was actually a responsibility that he was given by Dad. Even though we're not told that in the first time that it happens. When he goes and he's out there pasturing the flocks, he's got responsibility. He's out there with the brothers. He's in the field. They're taking care of the flocks. But he comes back with a report, and it's not good. Well, see, for Joseph, integrity mattered. For Joseph, what was right mattered. Maybe you have a strong sense of justice. Well, if so, you can identify probably with this young boy who even at age 17 had a responsibility, a sense of responsibility, and a sense of right and wrong. And he knew what he saw going on with the brothers was not healthy. And it was not right, and Dad needed to know. But he comes back, and he gives this bad report, but then we're getting another little vignette that shows us what's about to happen. It's on the heels of the bad report, the passage simply tells us, verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons. Why? Because he was the son of his old age. So here we have a favorite son. Well, this story of favoritism is a story that runs throughout this whole family. Remember, we're talking about generational sins. As we look at this family, as we look even at our own family, the impact that generational sins have on us, where do we know that this already began? Well, we can look to Isaac and Rebekah, who had Jacob and had Esau. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, here's Jacob following in the same pattern. But you know what? It wasn't even before the kids are born. When he gets two wives, well, who does he get? He gets Rachel and Leah. He loves Rachel. He worked for Rachel. He was tricked into Leah. And here he is with two wives. But you know what? They've got this bitter dispute going on between them. We're going to see this bitter dispute continue generationally throughout all the kids' lives. We're going to see it in each one of these sons' lives, who, by the way, remember in our story, they're adults now. Joseph is 17. That means Reuben is in his 30s. So these are men. These are responsible men, able to think, able to act, able to make decisions between right and wrong. And as this multi-generational favoritism is playing out, here's Jacob that we're just told straight out loves Joseph more. Well, he was the son of his old age. Okay, yeah, that's true. He was over 100 when he was born, or at this time. And he was the son of the wife that he loved most, who is already gone. She's already died. Rachel has passed away, so now he's left with Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah. Those are his wives. So it sort of makes sense. If you love this woman, you're going to love her firstborn son. Maybe even you prayed with her for decades when she was barren, wanting a son. You rejoice when she finally gets a son. So it makes sense. However, there's a consequence that goes in place. We know it. Maybe you know it from growing up. I know it from growing up. I grew up with a brother that if, as long as I was doing things like he was doing, I was okay. There was one problem with that. I'm not him. I love my family. I love my brother. I actually got to grips with this as an adult. But you know what? The baggage we gain in childhood sticks with us a long, long time, doesn't it? So here we have this dynamic going on. A favored son and a bad report. Well, what does that do to the brothers? Well, let me ask you, when was the last time someone came and shared bad news on you that you didn't want others to know? How'd that play out for you? It doesn't work out too well, does it? No, it's not going to work out well for Joseph either. Here he is, he's got the bad report. Dad, guess what they're doing this time? And the brothers were told are resentful. They resent him. Let's continue to look at what's unfolding now in this chapter. Not only is he out there bringing back a report to dad, not only is he obviously to the whole family loved more than any of the other brothers, but we see this thing of the robe. Dad had made him a robe. It says here in our translation of many colors. I'm just going to, you know, whether it's the Technicolor dream coat or not, let's just understand that there is something about this robe that sets Joseph apart. Literally in Hebrew, it's actually a long robe and a long-palmed robe. It would have been a robe that came to the middle of the palm of your hand, came down to your feet. Well, that's not a working man's robe. A working man's robe is out taking care of sheep, has one above the knees and one that's no sleeves because he's in there in the mix doing the hard work. This actually is a robe of royalty. It was worn by David's virgin daughters when David was king. That's the other time in Genesis or in the Old Testament history that we see this exact same Hebrew word. So this was a sign. This was a sign of status. It was a sign of inheritance. It was a sign of power. You're the favored son. Actually, you're the one that's going to get the number one son's blessing, the birthright. That's what this robe communicated. So when dad made this robe, and Joseph is putting it on every day, verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of them, they hated him. They couldn't speak peaceably to him. So it's gone from resentment to hatred. We're seeing a movement here. A movement of the emotion and the dynamic within the family. He is hated. But it's worse than that. Now he has a dream. They refer to him as a dreamer. I don't want us to get confused. This isn't like, you know, a normal 17-year-old dreamer who's just kind of daydreaming, lollygagging. I think I'll make it to the major league. You know, no. By the way, congratulations, our Briarwood soccer boys, state champs, our Briarwood baseball team in it yet this week for state championship. Way to go, coaches. Way to go, teams. Way to go, God.
Can this I just isn't, say real quickly, in our Sunday school class,
yes, yes. No, he's not here today. Yeah. Yes. Right. And with that in mind, pray for Pam. She was in a car accident this week. So she's, as far as I can tell, Carter, you have an update? Have things settled down for her on the... All right. Yeah. She seems to be doing fine, but we've been praying for her and coach. They can stay focused. So... All right, anyhow, back to the story, back to our lesson. All because I mentioned sports and Tim had to dive in, you know? You just go figure. All right, so Joseph has a dream, but it's not the type of a daydream. This is actually a prophetic dream. He understands when he has this dream that this means something. And he goes to the brothers. Excuse me, hello, Joseph, you're 17, but wake up, bud. You're not paying attention to the dynamic around you, because what's going on here is he goes to the brothers with his dream and his excitement, and he doesn't think about how it's going to impact them. Hey, guys, guess what? Had this dream. My sheath was standing erect, and you all came around me, your sheaves. And your sheaves all bowed down to mine. Now, how's that hit you? When you already are resentful and you already hate him. Yeah. So it's twice. They hated him even more. So there's a dynamic where it's breaking down. The family dynamic, the generational sins are so entrenched. It is becoming so desperate that it is getting worse. So here he is. He's got this dream. He shares the dream. They understand the dream. Will you reign over us? Will you actually rule over us? And they weren't asking for information. They were asking to push back. There's no way we're going to see that happen. Well, even better, prophetic dream number 2. Verse 9, he dreamed another dream, told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I've dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him. That's the only time that I've seen Jacob have backbone. And it was the wrong moment in the wrong direction. He didn't understand what God was doing. He didn't look into Joseph's life. He didn't understand that there was something much bigger going on here. He rebukes him. Now, maybe he did it in an effort to kind of establish some level of peace, because he's seeing what's going on with the brothers. They are fit to be tied. So he rebukes them. But the brothers are jealous. We've seen resentment. We've seen hatred. Now jealousy thrown in the mix, and the tipping point is becoming a turning point in Joseph's life. Meanwhile, Jacob ponders this. You ever remember Mary? She pondered all these things in her heart. Jacob's filing it away. While he rebuked his son, while he tried to maybe break into the dynamic of the broken relationships between brothers, brother and brother, he's still remembering this dream too. Now, verse 12, the turning point. Now the brothers went to the pasture of their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And Joseph said, "Here I am." Here we see the next event in this turning point of Jacob's life, Joseph's life. He is sent by dad. And he willingly goes. He says, "Whatever the responsibility is that you give me, I will take. I am available." We saw that same response. We see that same response, Isaiah 6. Isaiah has this vision. God says at the end of the vision, "Who will go for us?" And here is Isaiah saying, "Here I am. I'm available." That's the exact same response that we see here. A willingness to do whatever he was told to do. Verse 14. So dad tells him, "Go now, see if it's well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." It's good sometimes to put ourselves right into the thread, the timeline of what's going on. Jacob, what were you thinking? You're going to send him? Check him. Valley of Hebron, 60 plus miles. Through Bethlehem, where his mom is buried, through Jerusalem, up to Shechem. He gets to Shechem and he only finds a man. Some commentators like to speculate, I think over-speculate, that this was no just man, that it was an angel. I think that's a little bit of the over-identity, the risk we have with types of Christ. We've got to be careful. But God had a man there, which lets us know this is an area that is foreign to Joseph. He's not been to Shechem. Oh, Shechem, now some other brothers, they've been there. Simeon and Levi. They murdered the men of Shechem. All over their sister Dinah. This is not a good territory. And yet here he is, dad sending him. What is he thinking? Hey, you know, it's good for us because when we think of how we parent, how we grandparent, even how we deal with how we were parented. Sometimes we need people in our lives that can just speak truth to us in love and pull us back from the edge. We can get so involved and so in the thick of things, we can't see the forest for the trees. You know, I'm actually the kind of a guy, I can not only see that tree, but I can tell you what kind most of them are, and I can tell you what bug is eating it. I can identify an Ips beetle from a pine beetle. That's because in Colorado, you had to know that stuff. They could wipe out entire forests. All I'm telling you by that little story is, I can get sucked into the minutiae. Jacob was missing it entirely. What was he thinking? I wonder if, after he learns the rest of this chapter's story, how many times did he think to himself, "Why did I ever send you? What was I thinking? Why on earth did I think that was a good plan?" Hold that thought. So he gets to Shechem, finds a man, doesn't find his brothers. He tells him, "I'm seeking my brothers," verse 16. And he says, "Please tell me if you know where they are. Where are they pasturing the flock?" He says, "Go down to Dothan." So somehow we're in Alabama now. Don't know how that one happened, but way to go, Joseph. You knew there was a good tie to Joseph, didn't you? All right. But now we see what's about to unfold. We talk about conspiracy theories. This is a conspiracy fact. In verse 18, the brothers see Joseph coming from afar. Not a fire, afar. That's a long distance, I know. All right, we'll get it. But he's coming from a long way. How do they recognize him? It's the robe. Look, here comes the supervisor. Daddy's favorite boy. And they've had enough. See, resentment has gone to hatred, has gone to jealousy, is now to murder. Why did Jesus say if you hate in your heart, you're guilty of murder? You think there might be a correlation somewhere along the way? They're plotting murder. You wait. We're going to see what comes of his dreams. As soon as he gets here, we're going to kill him. Not only do they plan to kill him, but they plan even something of a cover-up. We'll say, we're going to kill him, verse 20, and throw him into one of the pits. That would be his burial, not too ceremonious. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. Actually, the word for dreams there is a different word in Hebrew. We'll see what becomes of his plans to rule, his kingship. They despise what that robe stands for. They despise what he stands for. They're going to get rid of him. Reuben to the rescue. Look at verse 21. But when Reuben heard, he rescued him from that plot. He rescued him out of their hands, saying, let's not take his life. Let's not shed blood. Throw him into a pit here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. So he's simply saying to the brothers hear it this way. Hey, Reuben, that might be a good plan. We'll let it be a slow, painstaking death. We're going to throw him in one of these deep pits. He can't get out of it. Let him rot right there. Brotherly love? Brother, where art thou? Yeah. Reuben had a reason. His plan was to go back and to rescue him out of their hand and restore him to his father. See, you understand, Reuben has a dog in this hunt. Reuben by now has already violated one of the concubine wives of Jacob and fallen into utter disgrace with his father Jacob. Somehow, I'm the one that's supposed to have the birthright. I've got to get back into God's good, into my dad's good standings. So he's got a plan. Hey, they were going to kill him. I rescued him. Here he is. Verse 23. So when Joseph came to the brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty and there was no water in it, and they sat down to eat. Dinner time. All right, so here we have it. They despise the robe. They get it out of the way as fast as they can. You think you're somebody? We'll show you. No distinction anymore. Throw him into a pit, and we see later in chapter 42, verse 21, if you want to look there later today, chapter 42, 21, we see something about what's really going on. In real time, this wasn't just, okay, I'm in a pit, guys, ha, 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 way to go, really funny, let me out. No, in distress of soul, this 17-year-old boy is crying, and he's crying out, come on, guys, let me out of here. Come on, guys, I'll do whatever you want. I'll play fair. You know, I'll make amends, whatever it takes. And they're so callous that they're sitting there eating and letting him go hungry while he screams. That's the picture. That's the reality. But while they're eating, they look up and they happen to see a caravan of Ishmaelites. Ishmaelites, you know Ishmael, that's the other brother, that's not Isaac, that's Ishmael, the other son of Abraham. Ishmael and all of his descendants were called Ishmaelites. There were also Midianites. They use these terms actually interchangeably. The Midianites and the Midianites are descendants of Abraham and Keturah. So these are all terms that mean the same thing, nomadic tribes who are not the promised line. The seed of Abraham, yes, but not the promised seed. So don't let that throw you when it says Ishmaelites, Midianites, same thing. Exact same thing in the author's mindset. So they come along, they're bearing gum, balm, myrrh, they're on their way to Egypt. Oh, Dothan just happens to be right on one of the busiest travel highways, business highways, going down to Egypt. And here they come. They've gone on their journey, they've bought the stuff, they've got the things they want to sell in Egypt. They're on the way back down, and you know what the brothers do? They negotiate a deal. Hey, we got a really good slave for you. He's strong, he's strapping, independent thinking, but he'll do whatever you tell him. And 10 brothers settle on a price of 2 shekels each, 20 shekels of silver, the price of a slave. And rather than kill their brother or leave him to die, they say, hey, he's going to be hundreds of miles away down in Egypt. He'll be as good as dead as far as we're concerned. Let's do this. And we'll make a little profit on the side. That was Judah's idea. Judah's the firstborn. Judah's the one from whom Christ comes. Judah's the one who actually is used of God to spare Joseph's life, which in turn plays out really well for Judah. So let's look a little bit further. They sell him, and when Reuben returns, verse 29, he gets back to the pit. He sees that Joseph's not there. He tears his clothes. He returns to his brothers. The boy is gone, and where shall I go? Now we see the motivation of his heart. This whole rescue plan of his was for himself. I got to look good. I got to get back in good graces with Dad. Then they took Joseph's robe, and they dream up this cover-up. They slaughter a goat. They dip the robe in the blood. They sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. So are they actually lying to Dad? Not quite. But they're letting Dad jump to his own conclusion, definitely. So here's Jacob. Verse 33, he identified it. It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. And Jacob, verse 34, tore his garments, put on sackcloth on his loins, mourned for his son many days. All his sons, all his daughters rose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, I shall go down to Sheol, to the grave, to my son mourning. And for 20 years plus, that's the condition. Brothers sell a lie, and brothers buy a lie. The deceiver again has been deceived. He believes his son is dead, and to him he is as good as dead because he doesn't know the rest of the story. But remember, we're looking at the life of Joseph as a type of Christ. All through this chapter, now we want to be careful. Remember I said each week we're going to try to focus on one way. Think of the betrayal of Christ. Now think of everything we just highlighted throughout here. Jesus was the beloved Son in whom God was well pleased. The Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. He sent him to mankind to see for himself how far mankind had fallen, to interact with mankind flesh to flesh, face to face. Mankind rejected him, conspired against him, found a way to crucify him, get rid of him, strip him of his robe, not just the physical robe he was wearing, but the robe of righteousness that they could not stand. Because we cannot stand truth when it exposes our sin. And here in Joseph, we see a wonderful type of Christ, our Savior. But there is a difference. Where Jacob the father mourns, God the father rejoices. It pleased the father, Isaiah 53:10, to crush his son so that we could be forgiven. Because see, he sees the whole story, the big picture. He knew what he was doing. He had ordained it before eternity passed. He had chosen us. This was the way to effect our election, our choosing, our salvation. This was God's plan. By the way, it was God's plan for Joseph. Where do we find Joseph at the end of the chapter? Look at the last verse, 36. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. That's a segue verse to chapter 39 that we'll pick up next week. But as we're thinking this through in closing, and we're thinking of Joseph, we're thinking as Joseph as a type of Christ, we're also thinking about God is at work behind the scenes and everything that happens in our lives. Can I just give us a thought of encouragement? And boy, Pastor was like dovetailing with what this story, what this passage is, with what he says. If you haven't been to 11 o'clock, you're going to see how well they mesh together. See, God's sovereignly ordaining everything. All things. Those hard things that you're going through, that adversity that you're facing. Listen to a quote that I have from Jerry Bridges. Jerry Bridges was the first professor I had in seminary. I love the way he writes. There's no question that adversity is difficult. It usually takes us by surprise and seems to strike where we are most vulnerable. To us, it often appears completely senseless and irrational, but to God, none of it is either senseless or irrational. He has a purpose in every pain he brings or allows in our lives. We can be sure that in some way, he intends it for our profit and his glory. See, we're not letting go of the sight that in all of Joseph's life, God is working behind the scenes. He's ordaining every moment of it. For Joseph's good, for Jacob's good, for the brothers' good, for eternity's good, and for his glory. He's doing the same for us today. Father, would you help us? Because when we're facing the difficulty, it's hard to remember you've got the big picture. You see the end from the beginning, and all we see is right now. Help our unbelief. Deepen our faith. Let us see whatever it is that we're walking through, straining over even right now, whatever hopeful prayers we are still praying for that prodigal in our lives, for the family dynamic that is broken. Let us see that there is mercy and there is grace and that God is on the throne. And you, God, are orchestrating it, and the story of our life is not finished yet. Help us be faithful. And help us be fervent. And encouraging one another. Speaking truth and love into each other's lives. And trusting you each moment of each day. We'll give you the glory in Christ's name. Amen.